When it comes to fashion, I don't claim to be the right person to ask in this parliament.
Hi, I'm Rania Yallop.
And I'm Elfie Scott.
And welcome to Party Time, the podcast from SBS News, keeping you up to speed on what's happening in federal politics.
All right, Rania, it is a sitting week in Parliament, but the Prime Minister is not here.
Yeah, exactly. He's been at a couple of summits in Southeast Asia this week, but plenty is still happening in his absence.
Yeah, so there is a lot of news focusing on something that he wore, despite the fact that he's not in Australia.
Yeah, that was at the end of his last trip as he got off the plane.
Australians expect their Prime Minister to show judgment, respect and leadership. Instead, we have got the opposite. Arriving back in Australia from his overseas trip, the Prime Minister stepped off the plane proudly wearing a T-shirt with the name of a band, Joy Division, whose origins are steeped in anti-Semitism. The name was taken from the wing of a Nazi concentration camp where Jewish women were forced into sexual slavery. At a time when Jewish Australians are facing a rise in anti-Semitism, when families are asking for reassurance and unity, the Prime Minister chose to parade an image derived from hatred and suffering.
I legitimately had no idea that that's what the band was named after.
Well, neither. But I think what's been really interesting is the response to all this. Very few of Susan Lee's coalition colleagues have really backed in her calls. Like Bridget McKenzie on Channel 7.
Look, there's a lot to legitimately criticise the Prime Minister about. Trillion-dollar debt, skyrocketing house prices and job losses in our heavy industrial sector. Wearing a T-shirt isn't one of them.
Yeah, and then David Littleproud, Nationals leader, said that he hadn't even heard of the band before, which is interesting. Other Liberal colleagues have kind of refused to weigh in too, like Shadow Industrial Relations and Employment Minister Tim Wilson.
Do you support your leader's call for an apology, yes or no?
So I'm sorry, we're focusing on these issues.
So you don't support your leader's call?
I will continue to focus on the issues around cartel kickbacks and CFME corruption.
Even her own deputy leader, Ted O'Brien.
When it comes to fashion, I don't claim to be the right person to ask in this parliament. You're looking pretty dapper. You might have some advice for those about what they should be wearing.
Well, your leader says that he needs to apologise. Do you agree with the leader?
Well, look, if you want to talk clothing, and today we're talking about inflation and cost impacts.
Does he need to apologise? He said it in Parliament.
Since the Albanese government has come to office, I believe clothing costs have gone up by about 14%.
Some did actually back her. So, like, Andrew Bragg said that Albanese has got to be careful. He's the Prime Minister of the country. He's got to be aware of these things. And then after all of that, Susan Lee actually stood by her comments.
I don't take a backward step on my comments, and I don't know that people realise that the Prime Minister, in wearing the T-shirt, was well aware of the dark history behind the words on the T-shirt. I'll leave it at that.
It's worth noting that most outlets have reported that many of the major Jewish community groups declined to comment on this issue at all when they were reached out to.
Yeah, and like, Rania, we've spoken about this a lot, right? Like, the coalition has been in, I think, fair to say, disarray since the federal election. People have been quitting. There's been, like, continued fights over net zero. So this honestly feels, like, a little bit clunky.
Yeah, it's definitely unsettling. And I might add that Susan Lee timed those comments to make sure they were picked up. She did them right before question time. She sent that transcript out to the press gallery, which isn't something that politicians tend to do unless they really want that point to be picked up by media. And then to have very few of her colleagues actually back her up after is, yeah, strange.
Yeah, it doesn't scream United Party, does it?
No. Now, the PM has responded to the ABC, reportedly telling them that the only meaning is it's a cracking album.
Such a dad thing to say. Yeah.
And on that, Liberal MP Zoe McKenzie told the ABC that the crime is wearing a band T-shirt. When you're a man of a certain age, he could have picked a better one.
It's so shady. The worst part is I literally texted you something that almost sounded exactly the same the other day.
So mean.
It's so mean.
Wear T-shirts.
Okay, well, look, speaking of things that men of a certain age are into, the Bureau of Meteorology this week, Rania, is in a bit of strife.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about, like, when men get over, I'd say 50, that yeah, like becomes yeah, yeah. the hobby.
100%.
Like, just weather.
The amount of times that my dad messages me about hail, he's so preoccupied with the idea of hail. We live in, like, inner city. Yeah. When have you ever seen hail?
Well, at least you know he's across it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that is true.
And the Bureau at the moment is riding through another PR storm.
Nice. See what you did. Yeah, this was not on my bingo card for 2025 at all.
The bomb spent $4.1 million on a website redesign that has ticked off a lot of people.
Yeah, so there have been complaints that the new website, it doesn't indicate storm severity particularly well. People have complained it's difficult to navigate and it lacks key tools like the ability to enter GPS coordinates for specific property locations.
Yeah, I don't remember a time when UX design has been so seriously in the political spotlight.
Truly. And MPs are like stepping in on this now. So Environment Minister Murray Watt called a meeting with the acting CEO of BOM. The Queensland Treasurer David Janetsky wrote to the federal government about it, and David Littleproud called for a review.
Yeah, so what has the BOM said in all of this?
The acting CEO, Peter Stone, apologised, and they said they will be making adjustments, and now they have to give a briefing to state and territory emergency services ministers this week on the steps that they're taking to improve it.
Yeah, also worth noting that this isn't the first time that the bombers like changed something and people really weren't happy about it. Like, no. A few years ago, they had a like a attempted rebrand, I guess, to the Bureau.
Yeah, that did not stick. No, you can't choose your nickname.
No.
We learned this. We all learned this in high school. Sorry, Bureau. Okay, so the other big news of the week is Labor's proposed changes to what's known as the EPBC.
Sounds like some sort of like delicious condiment topping. Kind of.
Like MSG.
Yeah. But it stands for this, I mean, mouthful of legislation, the Environment Protection and Biodiversity Conservation Act. There's been scrutiny of this act for years. A few years back, there was something called the Samuel Review, which was a massive independent review that basically found our laws to protect natural environment are broken and need fundamental reform.
So now the government is doing something about it?
Yeah, well, that's kind of what's up to debate at the moment, whether they're doing enough, whether they're not doing enough. This week, they've introduced a 1,500-page bill into the House of Representatives, and they say they want to pass it, like, pretty quickly. But whether or not that's actually going to happen is pretty unclear right now, verging on pretty unlikely based on the debate around it.
Yeah. And to be fair, like, even just reading it will take quite a lot of time. I saw Murray Watt footage of him in the corridors of Parliament holding this thing. It is massive. It looks like the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
So 1,500 pages of legislation, a mountain of work. And to chat through some of our questions around it, we're speaking to environmental law expert Dr. Kirsty Howie, the Executive Director of the Environment Centre in the Northern Territory.
Thank you again so much for joining us. Do you mind maybe just starting by explaining what the EPBC laws are and why they need updating?
Yeah, so the EPBC Act is an acronym for a long and complicated name that basically means these are our federal nature laws. They're the laws that we have to protect nature across Australia. And unfortunately right now, the whole of Australia is in the middle of what's called a biodiversity crisis. So things are really dire for nature in Australia, and that's what these laws are supposed to protect. And they are failing. And that's why we need this reform.
Talk around these laws has been around for a while. There was a review about 5 years ago, that Samuel Review. What came out of that and what's Labor trying to implement from that review here?
So the Samuel Review was commissioned by the former coalition government and it was devastating. It demonstrated and substantiated what scientists and communities have been saying, that the laws simply aren't working to protect nature and they need wholesale reform. They also did, in that report, make mention of the fact that the system wasn't working for business either. The report referred to slow approval times, duplication in processes, and a system that wasn't working for either nature or for industry. And I think these laws are weighted extremely heavily in favour of business.
You've said a few times that, you know, the laws as they stand at the moment, they're not working. Could you explain that a bit more? What's not working about them?
So one of the big problems with the laws is, and this is a technical legal term that's sort of quite boring, it's discretion. So what that means is there's a lot of power that's pretty much unconstrained in the Environment Minister to deal with nature, with impacts on nature and with proposals without a lot of constraints. And the core of what Samuel said in his review is that's got to stop. We need objective standards here. They need to be enforceable and they need to be really clear about when a project is going to be unacceptable, when it's going to be acceptable, and what conditions need to be imposed. So that's what needs to be in the laws, and that's where they were really failing. But what we have seen in the draft so far is actually reforms that do not close the loopholes of discretion, that still vest extraordinary power in the minister, and do things like fast-tracking developments, whether it be fossil fuel projects, whether it be renewables, whether it be housing, whether it be mining, and also hand significant power over to the states and territories to administer federal laws. And that's a big problem for nature. The last thing we need is to be removing federal oversight.
What about the establishment of an environmental protection agency at the federal level? Does that go some way to solving some of those issues?
Well, certainly Labor is pointing in all of its communications to the establishment of a federal environment protection agency, a federal cop on the beat, as the centrepiece of these reforms and the key reason why we should all back them. The problem with that is that as currently drafted, it looks like it falls far short of a thoroughly independent arm's length regulator for the environment. So there will be some increased enforcement and compliance provisions, like big fines, for instance, that we've seen industry pushing up against. But really the problem with this proposed EPA is that it's unlikely to have actual approval powers over projects that will instead remain with the minister and therefore possibly be highly politicised. And a lot of the standards and definitions that an EPA or decision makers would apply are still riddled with discretion, loopholes and Swiss cheese, really. I liken it to Swiss cheese because the reforms as I have read them, the drafts that I've read them, are so full of holes that it's really difficult to see how we can get that really strong, objective, transparent protection of nature that these laws need to achieve.
We know there's lots of things that are impacting the environment, you know, climate change things, you know, these kind of like development things. What is the scope of these laws specifically, and what are like the powers that are going to protect nature that are part of these laws?
Right now, the laws are pretty confined in what they deal with, and that's deliberate. States and territories have got the power to give approvals, environmental approvals for a raft of projects. What these laws do is they act in relation to what are called matters of national environmental significance. And these are matters that often we have treaties about internationally. So we've actually got obligations under international law to implement and enact laws to protect these things. And those things include Ramsar wetlands, it includes World Heritage places, and it also includes threatened species. And so the problem has been that the laws have never really done anything to protect those species. And they're really deficient because they don't deal with climate change at all. There is simply no consideration to climate change in the laws. And so many have been advocating for a long time for there to be climate considerations embedded in the legislation or a climate trigger that would mean that the climate impacts of things like massive coal and gas projects can have their climate impacts measured, because at the moment, the federal government is not considering climate in these decisions, and it's a fundamental deficiency in the laws.
You mentioned the climate trigger just then, and I think like the wording of that can be quite confusing for people. Like, it's something I always forget, like the definition of even. So could you please just maybe give us like a shorthand definition of what the climate trigger is and why the Greens are pushing for it?
Yeah, so in my view, it's a fairly difficult thing to argue with. At the moment, there's really no mention of climate in our federal environment laws. There have been many attempts to try to get decision makers, government decision makers under the legislation to consider the climate impacts of projects. So the proposal would be that where there is, for instance, a coal and gas project proposed in Australia, the federal government, the environment minister, would need to consider the climate impacts of that particular proposal. Seems pretty basic in a climate crisis, we would have thought, but that has actually been a factor that's been heavily resisted by the federal government.
We've been here before, you know, in this position of environmental laws being introduced to Parliament by Labor. What happened last term with all of this, and what's different this time around?
Well, last time this all ended spectacularly badly for the environment, and we are in some ways in the same position again with some fundamental differences in the politics. Tony Plibersek, the former federal environment minister, with great fanfare after Labor were returned to government in May 2022, announced that she would be implementing all of the recommendations of the Samuel report with what she called nature positive laws. And then really there was kind of crickets from a public perspective for a long time, and there was increasing pressure being built up from the mining and coal and gas industries to oppose these laws. And so by the time that it came to introduce the laws, Labor made a decision to just go ahead with the EPA part of the laws, not all of the other bits, to improve the way that the laws dealt with climate, introduce standards, improve nature, etc. So they made that political decision and then got very, very close to a deal with the Greens. And then there was an intervention from the Prime Minister, Albanese. It was getting pretty close to the election, and it was due to pressure from the Western Australian government and the Western Australian mining lobby, which is extremely powerful. And they basically torpedoed these laws when there was a chance to get something better. And so right now we find ourselves in a similar position. The laws that have been introduced are far more comprehensive than what was introduced by Tanya Plibersek last year. But we have the same conundrum. We have the wedge politics. We have the appeals to the Greens to do a deal or the coalition to do a deal. And in my view, that does not serve people, places we love, and our nature very well.
Labor says that the deals on the new reforms should be done by Christmas, and they would place blame on the Coalition and the Greens if that doesn't happen. Do you think that that's a reasonable timeline?
Absolutely not, with reforms of this scale. And what's happened today is that there's been closed shop negotiations where, with a drip feed of some parts of the legislation to industry groups and some larger environmental groups. And that is not how you do transparent consultation. There should have been a draft put out to the public for everyone to see its flaws, for there to be a public debate transparently about the shortcomings, but that just hasn't happened. So now to introduce the laws and insist that they are passed by the end of the year, and what that means is like less than a month away for such serious reforms, is really concerning. And we think that there needs to be a proper Senate inquiry, extensive discussion in the community about these laws, and everything needs to slow down and we need to be consulted properly. This isn't serving nature communities or First Nations communities very well at this point. We would appeal, I think, most people in Australia to ensure that we can all properly digest what's on the table.
Kirsty, thank you so much for running us through all of that and sharing your expertise on this topic. We really appreciate your time today.
Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
So, unsurprisingly, the Greens think the laws are too weak and the Coalition thinks that they're too strong.
Yeah, so the Greens say the laws are riddled with loopholes, much like the Swiss cheese, and they feel the changes will allow coal and gas projects to be fast-tracked and not address native forest logging, which is a big issue for extinction and carbon emissions. And this was the Greens' Sarah Hanson-Young talking on Thursday morning.
We will, this morning in the Parliament, seek to refer that package off to a Senate inquiry. There is 7 separate bills here, hundreds of pages, and Australians really deserve to know exactly what's in here. Because from what we have seen, this is weakening environmental protection.
Now, the Coalition are arguing for this bill to be split, basically, like, let's address the pro-business initiatives, like streamlining project approvals, and then figure out the environmental protections later on. The Coalition's environment spokesperson, Andrew Bell, had this to say on Thursday morning.
Murray Watt's been sent in to fix that election promise because Tanya Plibersek failed in the last term. Let's be clear, if Labor decide to do a deal with the Greens on these EPBC Act reforms, Australians should feel alarm because it will have an impact on jobs, it will have an impact on productivity, and it will have an impact on investment in our nation.
So yeah, this is something that we're going to be watching with a lot of interest. As we said, the Albanese government is convinced that this will be ready by Christmas. We are yet to see that. But there is also, honestly, a lot riding on this, right?
Yeah, and it's something that they failed to do last term in a, you know, after they promised it would. So I think it's something that they're going to be pretty keen to get across the line and avoid some of those kind of like clunky holdups that happened during the last term around these laws.
But I'm sure we will have an update of some sort next week when we are back for another episode for Sitting Week.
Yeah, we'll be back next Friday. But before then, please subscribe, give us a thumbs up, 5-star review, and we'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.